Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and welcome also to season 4, which is very fun to say as a weird project I'd been planning for ages and then started during a pandemic. And now the pandemic is so long ago, it's kind of taboo to even talk about it. And this season, we're planning a few things differently, including episodes will be every other week. And we might just address that with our guest when we get into it, because I feel like if anyone understands burnout, it's you after the experience we went through where we met. And true to form, Milan is eating exactly when we start recording, but we're going to plow on through. Our guest this week, I had the delight of working with at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this August whilst running a box office. If you're unfamiliar, it's the largest comedy and indeed arts festival in the world, with thousands of shows every day for a month. We spent much of that time working together so closely, we even chose to share a desk. So I think it's safe to say we got real codependent. Please welcome Jasmine Lindemann.
Thank you. We're very codependent. I miss you deeply. All the time. Why are you in a different country? I hate this.
Yeah, I'm having serious withdrawal symptoms, actually. So this is lovely to see your face.
I do like it. I wish I could hold your hand, though. But it's okay. I'll make do.
Yeah, there was a lot of being like reassuring midday hugs as things got stressful. And honestly, maybe not unrelated, a lot of discussions on like, are relationships things that we need? or do we have enough going on in our friendships?
And yeah, are we okay with this? Because I'm pretty okay with this. Maybe some sex on the side, but I feel like our relationship over that time sustained me more than any relationship with, you know, a sexual partner has. So.
And that is one of the nicest things that anyone's ever said to me. So yeah, maybe this is it. Maybe the podcast is solved. It's us over Zoom.
I think we've done it. You're welcome, everybody, listeners. You're welcome.
Season complete. But, you know, it's funny that like already we're getting onto like similar ground as next week's episode, which strangely through the time warp that is podcasting, I recorded before this, where we covered a lot of similar stuff in terms of like how important friendship is. And I think the thing I didn't talk about, but adds to it, is how like friendship can be a really wonderful basis as a thing that you need. And romantic relationships can be a really wonderful thing, but neither should be taking place of both.
I agree. One of my pet peeves at weddings, so they're like, I can't believe I'm here marrying my best friend. And you're like, rude. No, people that person went to high school with. Like, it's people who like made that person, either of them, into like the human beings they are that day. But now their significant other is their best friend.
Yeah, you're there as a bridesmaid. Just throw the flowers, stomp off.
Literally.
Be like, well, today is a divorce and a wedding.
Literally, no, I was the best person for a wedding because progressive. So I was the best person, one of the best people for a groom a few months ago.
It's not even the term. You just assigned yourself that.
Can you imagine? Hi, I'm Jasmine. Yes, best person. Thank you so much for noticing. No, so we were best people because there was like three girls and a guy. Like it was like vibey. It was lovely. But like we'd all known the groom obviously longer than the bride had. Because of course we have. Because that's always the case in every wedding. Like generally you don't have friends that you've met. Sometimes you could. But like most of those people who are standing up with you on an altar situation have put in the hard yards, you know, and have done the time. And then I guess are left with the crime. But it's definitely one of those things. And maybe that's the cynic in me. It's just like, are they your best friend? Or do you just live with them? Like,
Big question, dangerous questions to be thinking about on a wedding day. Because I have this strange quirk. I've never been that convinced on marriage for me. I love it for a lot of people. Love a wedding, particularly when I'm not paying for it. Yeah, it's always been this thing of I'm open to it. If I was with someone where that means the world to them, absolutely, let's go. But it's not on my personal bucket list. However, what is, perhaps backwardsly, is being a best man. That seems
cute.
Like a fun job. And I feel like I'd be very good at it. The one thing maybe that may count against me getting asked is I feel like something that I would take very seriously is the idea of like, you check with them on the day they're sure about it.
I love that. I love like, okay, last minute. Do you want to get out of here? Do you want me to pull the collar out? You don't have to do this. You don't have to go through with this. We didn't do that at the wedding because they already have a child and they're definitely in love and we're fine. But you're right. That's the fun one when you're like, there's still time.
Yeah, you're like, it's too late. We can't ask if they're sure about the child.
Also, the child, the best. For me, real highlight of the wedding. Real delight. Sorry for the couple. I didn't name them, but they know who they are. Love you, babe. But I don't know. I think I like a wedding, but I'm an events girl, right? So like, I love a wedding. I love an event. The first time I was ever in Scotland, I was stage managing my friend's wedding because we're theatre kids and that's what we called it. Because she was the director and the writer, but she's also the star and the lead. So she can't run it on the day. She's got to be the bride. She's got to play that role. And I remember the groom getting so annoyed when we kept calling everyone like, oh, so this is where the audience will be. And he's like, guests, we hear you, but shush. And I cued the bagpipes. My mom's really proud of that. She's like, you know, my daughter cued the bagpipes at the Scottish wedding. And I'm like, yes, that was me.
There, you've assimilated.
My claim to fame. I know, I'm one of them.
One of them.
But yeah, I do live in Scotland. I know this accent is deceiving, but I do live in Scotland nearly 7 years.
Sound like you're trying to convince yourself. Like, I think.
Always. I'm always like, no, I'm here to stay, I promise. But also marriage for you, I would think, would be green card related to get back into Europe. I get that. That makes sense to me.
Oh, I mean, when I was living in the UK, like the idea of Brexit, I was like, I mean, I guess it makes me more eligible.
Yeah, you're a real catch. You already were, babe.
Get a European passport with me. If you were on the fence, you know, that's
really what's
that
getting you ahead of it. With the marriage stuff, though, I do think it's like how you've been raised. Like, I do think that people probably who are raised in a very traditional, parents who are married for 30 years probably have a very different maybe look at that.
I do have that. The thing is, we've talked about it before on the pod, but like for me, fundamentally, and I know this, I understand that this is not how everyone views marriage, but for me, I find there to be something actually more romantic about you wake up every day and choose to stay with that person.
Yeah.
And there's no legal repercussions or financial repercussions if you don't. Like, something about that actually is more romantic than the, like, we have the document. And I know that people would argue, like, oh, no, we don't stay married because of the document. But I don't always understand what it's for. If it's not from their, like, historical, like, women being treated as property stuff. We don't believe that anymore. So what is it for?
I mean, my mum was married at 21. And married, divorced, had me by 23. Learned her lessons, never got married again. My father's been married 5 times. So I just think that on a base level, which there's a Fringe show in there, speaking of one day, I'll write it down one day. It's a fun story. But I just think that, yeah, what's that for? I mean, I don't think he knows he can just date people. Loves getting married.
No one's told him.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
But because that's my perception of marriage. It's not, I think, super surprising to go, oh, yeah, that's probably not going to be. I didn't have that picture perfect growing up and like, oh, then you'll be married and have all these things because I have quite a feminist, you know, left-wing mother and just a really prolific married man father. So, like, it's just, yeah, I just don't think I had that image in my head.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the things for me is, like, I don't know how much further to get into marriage, but I...
Yeah, sorry.
It's because I've already forgotten what I was going to say. I think a lot of what it comes down to for me, like my big fear of it, is the idea that there are people out there that have this preconceived idea of their life. And we all do in different ways. A lot of mine is like career stuff of like certain milestones I want in my life. They're just not marriage related. But the fear I have around that is if you do have that one, then are you looking for a person that fits this pre-described role? Is it, you know, this person is good enough, or I feel I need to be married by this age. There's certain social pressures, certain family pressures. And so someone gets picked to fill a gap that wasn't made for
material.
Them. Yeah. And that is something about that feels scary to me in a way that like, oh, I have certain ambitions in life of, let's say people have financial goals. Let's say people have goals of one day owning a property or living in a different country, having a job. To make that dream come true, the job isn't a human. You can use the job, you know, it's a fairer collateral. You're looking at me like, this person's more cynical than I am.
That's not true. I think we're equally cynical. No, I get that. And I think even when you're in relationships or any kind of transactional state, I think if you're looking at it as a transactional state in general, which I guess at a base level they all are, right? Any kind of relationship.
Yeah, you both want to get things out of it, but you also don't want anyone to feel used.
No, which is a fun balance, I think. And then I don't think everyone always nails.
You're like, is it a balance? Is it a paradox? And I think this comes back to something we've been talking about a lot during the last month. And hence why I mentioned burnout, because this is all through the filter of two people that were working. A lot of hours, a lot of late nights, so many tickets were sold. And
they just did a lot of reporting, so many tickets. Rough, but that's real. What was your question? Sorry.
No, I feel I should reference, because I said earlier about us switching to every other week. And part of that for me was that I am at a kind of point of burnout where it's really affecting my creativity. Like, I love this show. It's so good to be back. It's lovely to be opening the season with you, a new friend. And yet I'm aware of there's a ceiling to how my emotional state needs to be in order to be creative. Yeah. Like, I can do a lot of plow work of, like, you know, a lot of sort of day-to-day menial tasks, life admin. But when it comes to something that I love and something that I want to be the best it can be and be funny and entertaining and have, you know, a great kind of range of guests, I came into the Fringe realizing I was burnt out. And that is not the environment to catch up on sleep. Something had to give in my life. So both this show and Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health, are going bi-weekly, and I'm already feeling a big weight off pressure-wise, but also just that, you know, two episodes a week, it's a lot. There's a reason why most podcasters don't do it.
It's too much. I think you've got to really, you've got to prioritize. And also with things like this, I mean, I did a podcast back in the day, a COVID podcast. It did not last as long as this, but I loved it, but I only loved it when it was still fun. Like, I think you've got to really make sure it's still fun for you, and you've got to take the breaks, and you've got to, like, also set measurable goals for yourself. Because if you're just, like, setting a standard for other people, who's that for? You know, like, I don't know why. Yeah,
I know. But I mean, I'm in a trap of my own creation, because I'm like, I decided we were weekly, and now I feel self-conscious taking that back, and therefore need to kind of, I wanted to address it on air, but also, like, yeah, there is absolutely that benefit for the listeners anyway, because me feeling less burnt out and getting to catch up on rest and rejig my work-life balance a bit also leaves more, like, creative energy for, okay, how can we plan ahead the season? How can we record more in advance? How can we find even broader perspectives of guests and keep the show fresh? So that's the exciting part.
I love that. And then also maybe there's, like, a sneaky bonus episode here. And then if you are feeling it that week, then you've got that energy. And then that's always an extra. I mean, you know my philosophy. It is.
This is why we relate.
And over-deliver.
This is why we relate. Because we're like, yeah, we'll tone things down. But maybe we launch another podcast. We'll do less work. And then we'll start another three projects.
Should we just do one that's just us?
Yeah. Already. Already.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
New season of this show. Let's start another one.
Yeah, it's just us, and it's because we miss each other. There's a little side hustle just for us being like, hi, I love you.
Yes, and the world needs to know about
so
it.
Silly.
But talking about love, we're less sure about. Call. We did a lot of conversing about relationships, what they mean to us, and I'm coming into this season in quite a strange place of being less sure about relationships than I've ever been. You know, the listeners left last season with me feeling ready to date again, and I was like, this is unfortunate timing, I want to get back into dating, and now we're having a break, so you won't even hear about it. And I did go on some dates, and they were grand, and I feel like they're a reflection of me having learned certain things, because certain things could have gone better, certain things could have definitely gone worse. But my overall reaction after the fact, when none of them sort of went anywhere, was maybe I have another 6 months off dating. And it's difficult to know if that's kind of general burnout, if that's dating burnout, because it can be so much stress. And I, you know, I already talk about it, but, you know, dating is already a part of my life via the show, even if I'm not actively doing it. Or am I not as sure about relationships for me as I thought I was?
That's a bigger question. I think it's really interesting. I think taking time out to reflect of, like, what you want and what you're trying to get out of these situations, and again, in that kind of transactional aspect. But I also think that if you've gone out and gone, oh, that's actually not for me, no, thank you, is that just the situation? Is it the timing? Is it all those things? But I definitely think that, and you and I are similar in this way, the dating's exhausting. Like, especially if you're an extrovert in that situation, you are carrying those, like, those dates. You are putting in all that effort. I would say as a woman, there's lots of, like, other stuff that you have to do. You have to, like, there's a lot of, like, pre-date stuff you've got to do. And you have to, like, really be aware of, like, how you're presenting. And that's not just as a woman, but that's how, like, I definitely feel in that way. And it's exhausting. And then I was just watching a TikTok the other day, because that's how I learn. And she's like reflecting on the good parts of the date. And was it just you? Like, did you initiate those funny jokes or those things? And like, how much of the good parts of the date is you actually and not them at all? And then reflecting on that a little bit and going, oh yeah, how much did you make that okay? Or how much did you make them comfortable or make that funny, or, you know, took the piss out of yourself or a situation to make it better for everybody else? And like that kind of emotional labor, because it's a lot.
That's quietly mind blown me. Yes, absolutely that. Because I'm already having flashbacks to like, oh, that was a great date. The chat just kept flowing. But is that because I'm fucking podcast hosting the date?
Is it? Because you were incredible to speak to. Like, obviously we were work colleagues and then beautiful friends and now on a podcast together. But in the sense that, like, you have a really interesting way of connecting to people and probably pulling those kind of bits of conversation out anyway, or having that kind of connection. But that's you, not them. And I just think that's such an interesting way to start looking at things.
Yeah, I do relate. I appreciate the compliment. And I do relate to that, because sometimes, you know, I'm aware that I'm so fascinated in people and a lot of people aren't. I think a big part of it is I know what I find interesting, you know, so like I'm known for talking about certain topics, but I'm also leaning into those topics. And so I do get to kind of find out about people's relationship life, their mental health, their hopes, their dreams, their work, their passions. And these are what interest me. Then I'll like chat to people in more conventional workplaces than this one, where I'll know all about somebody. And they'll be like, oh, I didn't know about their relationship or their domestic situation or their opinions on politics. And I'm like, oh, what are you asking them about?
Yeah, what was that? But that's the classic, like, better to be interested than interesting, right? Like, that's that kind of, do you not have that one? Yeah, but then fun fact, you're both. So it's true. I've come to this podcast just to compliment you. But I do think it's that thing, because also you want it to be both. Again, that's that balance. But I think all you can control is your interest, right, in someone. You can have a good anecdote and you can have a good bit for that, or you could be foreign, which is my thing. But like, you can... It's always a good base. What's it like in Australia? Let me tell you. So you've got some base stuff all the time. You've got your go-tos. But I definitely think there's that thing. It's asking those questions. I think it's really refreshing when, I mean, for me, like, our conversation is really refreshing, because I think I'm also very similar. Like, I kind of like to know how someone ticks, or like why people are making certain choices, or what's their childhood trauma and those kind of things. But I think you pull out of people in a really interesting way.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, honestly, you know, plenty of my dates are a lot less wholesome than this. Maybe you're the new bar. But yeah, it's an interesting place to be in, for sure, to be like, I feel like I know more about dating than I ever have. And yet I've never been more on the fence about. And so I'm going to kind of continue to explore that. And the way we're going to sort of lean into it for the purpose of the content is this season, I really want to ask questions about what relationships mean to people. Because we're all looking for different things. We all have different hopes, expectations around relationships. And I feel like sometimes these aren't explored, that we can assume we're kind of on the same page about what constitutes a relationship, you know, what conversations need to be had. And yet I continually come across times when that's not the case. People have entirely different versions of what they think cheating is, of what they think, you know, exclusivity means. Like, do you need to have a conversation, or do you go on a certain number of dates and then you expect that you're exclusive?
That's a bit of fun.
It's I know which one I think is correct, but you know, I do come across people with all sorts of perspectives on what even is a relationship. So yeah, we're circling back to basics a bit this season of like, what is a relationship and what can we do about the dating world and its chaos?
What can we do? I think the easiest
we get to the end of the season and the answer is nothing.
Unfortunately, nothing. That's my hot tip. Sorry. It's no good. I remember that exclusivity chat I had with my ex, and I was trying to like be subtle and cool about it or something. And he was talking. I try to like make it to like similar to like when he's like script writing, and how like piece of paper is so hard and having parameters is like much easier to write a story. And I was like, cool, let's use that metaphor rather than just like using my regular words. Yeah. Nope. I was like, what if we make this into a story about stories? But his line was, until we actually were, but for a bit when we weren't exclusive, he was like not into any like Poly has, like, lots of people have, like, lots of interesting poly rules or, like, open relationship rules or, I think, interesting boundaries, and obviously it's super individual for everybody. And I was like, well, maybe something like that. We should have, like, maybe discussions about those kind of things. And he's like, no. And I was like, cool. And he was just, like, more into promiscuity than into, like, there being a label on it. But turns out he didn't do anything for the 2 years we were together at all. He just made me think he did. But that's another story.
Look, I consider myself to be very strange, but I really feel the world is catching up.
Yep. It's rough.
Most how strange everyone else is too. And so tell me, along the lines of chaos in dating, I think you have
yes
multiple stories, you tell me.
I have a couple for you. Bit of fun is what I would say. Which is, people who know me know it's one of my weird catchphrases.
Yes, Jazz loves to say that, like, how was the shift today? A bit of fun, and then goes on to give me a whole list of things that nearly caught on fire.
They were really no good at all. But you gotta just take it. So, which is fun to say in a dating podcast. So I've got a couple. One of them, I was in a weird, I go through these like hoe phases is what my friend calls me. Not me in general, but like these phases, but yes as well.
I go through phases, my friend slut shaming me.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. No. I literally talked to her yesterday about it. And she's like, oh, you're in a little hoe era. Good for you, babe. So I was like, yes, I am in a little hoe era. But I go through like patches of it. And maybe it's similar to you, but it won't be necessarily dating. It'll be like the straight versions of like Grindr hookups. Or like, it was Australia. It was a different time. Tinder used to be like Grindr in Australia. I'm not sure if it was ever like that in Europe, but in Australia it was. And so I literally like was in a taxi, picked up this person right in front of the art center in Australia, in Melbourne, and he was part of the orchestra. And then he came back to my house. I didn't know much about him, but he seemed fine. And the scariest thing to ever happen was that he brought a 1.3 million violin into my house, an antique, precious thing. And just to really say this, I took cello in primary school because I was convinced I would break a violin. Like, I'm a big person, and I was like, that violin is too delicate to be near me. And now my worst nightmare has come true. The most precious, most expensive violin is in my bedroom. That's a bad call. It was the fear. So yeah, he came over and it was like a very like, we were drunk and it was like a vibe, but he was American and then proceeded to tell me that he was in a school shooting when he was in preschool. And I had no way to qualify this, but also it's not like it's that surprising statistically. So I was like, oh my God, okay. And we just like had a really weird night of not really doing anything except for like maybe kissing a little bit. And then just like talking through, it turns out he was really high because musicians, but I didn't put that together beforehand. And then his sexy move was to pull out a sex toy, like, do you want me to use this on you? I was like, yeah, no, thank you. I don't know where that's been. I don't know why straight men think it's fine just to have like sex toys that are like only used on women, like, I assume multiple women, and just take it around with them like some sort of weird party favor, because it's not. It's weird. So that's a weird through line to my second one as well. But it was just a really weird situation. And in my body count, he's just like, I don't know who his name is. So I just call him Violin because I have no concept of what that man's name is. But it was just one of the weirdest dates, and dates in a very, like, obviously soft D dates. But like, it was like, which is not meant to be a euphemism. I just mean that a date. Like, I did not mean that. But it's not incorrect either. But he was one of the weirdest ones, I think, that I've ever been part of, because, again, nothing really happened, but also, what the actual hell, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a very big difference between foreplay and trauma dumping.
Yeah.
This man had not taken that workshop. Bless Americans. You. Yeah, that is a lot. I mean, it does remind me of Katie Boyle, who's been a multiple-time guest on this podcast. She's Irish but now lives in New York, and she talks about like the big thing in the dating culture there is the men have done enough therapy to weaponize their trauma, but not enough therapy to not affect you with the trauma in the first place.
It does not take that much to like make an American man be like, oh, weapon, here we go. So like the trauma of that makes so much sense. Like,
yeah
they're like, aha, I get it. Hurt you, hurt me, hurt you. Yeah. So that makes sense to me, but it's so messed up. It's so, yeah, I don't know. Americans, it must be really hard. If you live in America, probably as well. It's probably harder.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Americans. Feel for them.
Yeah. Again, in the sense, like, I was like, is he also, like, is this a real thing? Like, are people just making up being in school shootings because you can. It's a weird thing to make up, but it's also a weird thing to tell someone you've just met.
That's quite terrifying if it's like some kind of pickup line of his.
Yeah, real disturbing. But this was in a weird phase of mine where I didn't go on dates. In Australia, I didn't go on many dates in general. Like, I was like, again, I would just use Tinder as Grindr in the sense of like just kind of a hookup-y situation for like when I wanted some external validation, which is really what it's all about. So the dating podcast, welcome. If you're here for external validation, I know where you can get it. I've now done a master's degree. Academic validation, much hotter. That's my hot take. Real good stuff. Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah, slightly more expensive.
Yeah, it is. It's harder to access on an app.
Yeah, but,
no, it's yeah. not. You have to actually work a lot harder. My experience. But wow, those payoffs.
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
What a time. And do you want to skip straight into the second one? Should we go for two?
Oh my God, the second one? Yeah, go for two. This one was, I went on technically two dates. The first date was very wholesome. It was at a faux restaurant, which is a terrible idea. You shouldn't have noodles on a first date. It's a very sloppy and not in a good way kind of way. It's a very messy time. But that was kind of fine. He was a baker. He lived above the supermarket in Footscray. This is too many details. Yeah, exactly. You know these towns. This is my Australians who listen to this podcast because I'm on it. They'll be like, oh, I remember that one. It's a bit of fun. That's for you, Cassie. That's for you. But the second date, because we'd messaged a little bit between the dates, obviously, and the second date was just going to be at his house. Ooh, hot. And he was going to make me dinner. And then I get there and it's already too much. Like already like there's candles everywhere, like too much. And like even if he had done one of these things, it would have been fine. Because he did all of them, it wasn't fine. And even like the cutest thing he did that I thought was like, great, if that was it. He like made like a curry thing and he used jasmine rice. And If you know me, you know that I love things with my name on it. So there's heaps of things, tea, right? And also like, I don't associate myself with a flour. I'm very much more of a rice. Like, I'll get you through the winter, you know? Like that's kind of my resonance with that name, with my name is very that. Like, won't I though? You're laughing, but you know it's true. You know, I'm just a bit more hardy. Well, I'm not a delicate little flower that is a jasmine flower, right? Like, I can't associate myself with that. So I was like, well, this will do. But my point is, he did that, and that was really sweet. But he also, like, all these candles were brand new. He bought, like, whole new, like, sheets for his bed. He bought me a robe, my own robe, which I wish I'd taken to this day. Because it was, like, a towel robe and had little cute little ears on it, like a little mouth. Because I had a shower there, and then he, like, dressed me up in his little robe. And it was just a lot. And then again, with a sex toy situation, but this one at least he bought just for me, so it wasn't the same situation as before. But again, he was like, do you want me to use this on you? I was like, no, not at all. Thanks so much. You have to get really cordial about these things when you're like, you're trying to say no to, again, men in a way that you're like, I don't want to offend them so they can rape and kill me. So you have to be like, how to do this in a way that you can kind of be like, I don't want to hurt your feelings.
Maybe next time.
Not right now. So they think, yeah, you've got to do all that work, which is not sexy. Sidebar, that's not a fun thing. So yeah, there was that. And then literally he'd made me, it was like Easter time, I guess, so he'd made me like jelly puddings and like in the Easter egg shell. It was too much. All of it was too much. And there was definitely more things, but it was just like so intense. And so like, you want to move in here and be my wife? I've got an extra room already. And you're like, oh, thank you.
There used to be a woman living in it, but she's not there anymore. No further questions, please.
We don't know why. It's very Bluebeard's castle. And that was the vibe I was getting. And you have to listen to yourself in those situations and get out of there clean. And to be fair, I was really proud of myself because I got out of there, but I definitely went, I think we're going to have another date. And I said it. The door was already open when I said it. I'm not an idiot. But it was one of those things that I'm like, oh, this isn't it. This is too much. And like, it was before Label even said the words love bombing in like colloquially, I think. This was some time ago now. 10 years ago now, but like I was just like, this doesn't feel true, this doesn't feel right, this feels like something that I can't reciprocate because I don't know this person and I don't know what kind of I don't know what they want from me, but it's not what I'm gonna give them because I can't, because what the fuck.
Yes,
he has a lot of hamsters and slugs, pet slugs. That says a lot about someone.
And I hope they're all keeping well. Bless them.
Do I still follow my Instagram? Yes, because I'm curious.
You're like, let's see how this one turns out.
I just want to know.
Yeah,
It's a lot, sorry.
No. It's a very good story.
That's where you're going to love them, right? Like, all of these things, you're like, oh, that'll be a good story.
Yeah. And this is
how I live my life.
And this is the innate, kind of one of the innate sort of risks/burdens of dating, is you're putting yourself out there, you're doing your best to be vulnerable. And, you know, there is something deeply insincere about love bombing. So, you know, it's the opposite side of the same coin where, you know, you're opening up to somebody and you think they are, but they're not. They're just pretending to. Or they're just letting you do all the talking or all the work or all the vulnerability. And so neither side of that coin is what you want. You want someone to come on the journey with you.
Yeah, that'd be great. What's that like?
I don't know if I'm the person to ask. Yeah, so, you know, relationships are hard. We're tired.
It's really hard out there, guys. No, so I feel like this is, those are my dating. You told me to bring dating stories. I was like, these are some fun ones for you. There you go.
No, I really appreciate that. You know, I both have concerns, but I also have hope. I'm also a romantic, and I think we have that in common.
Love
of
that.
Like, we want the fairy tale.
I don't. Okay, so like part of me might. I think part of me might, but I think the part of me that wants that just wants to be seen, right? Like, that's, I think, what everyone wants. Just like that, like, perception of, like, who you really are. Or, but you want someone to ask you a question, or it's like, or actually want to know the answer to that question, you know, and retain something about your life. I was on the ground, but that's what we'd like.
I think this is already, people hear next week's episode, this is already becoming a theme. It's us talking about what we want in relationships and realizing out loud on air, the bar is on the floor.
It's not good. Like, I mean, I feel like I knew, like, I'm definitely not sold on it. Like, I mean, a weird dating stage at the moment, which, you know, some of that, some would say another hoe era, who knows.
Are we okay to say that you dated a performer?
Date, again, feels like a strong word. But, well, we spent a lot of time together, to be fair, this performer and I, and to fair, and we'll talk about it off air maybe, did message me yesterday, so.
The plot continues.
She thickens. But yeah, so it's a whole weird time. But also I've been like, I think because of that situation, I went heavy on the apps and I was like, I'm going to go date right now. I'm going to make sure that I'm proven that I actually can have dates and am attractive and all of these things, which is often when I go in these phases when I'm like, something else has triggered it. And then I go like heavy into like, must have this external validation, must have validation from men. Like, and in this case, it was because things didn't end or like turn out the way I kind of wanted with the situation. And yeah, so I was like just desperate for that. So like I went on a date on last Thursday, which was good and complicated in other ways. But it's interesting that those are the times if I'm really content and having a great time with my friends. Again, I don't normally notice a lack. There's not something that's lacking, but I'm not normally putting myself out there all the time because I'm kind of like, I'm actually kind of busy and my cup is full. And, you know, like I've got incredible friends. I talk to my family all the time. Really cute cat that I mentioned, you know, like I've got busy job, busy life. Like I can't always, like the idea of fitting someone else into that or compromising any of those things for someone else doesn't seem really worth it most of the time.
Oh, no, I think that's where I'm at. I'm like, my bar has gone from on the floor making all the wrong choices to now like someone is going to have to really convince me. Someone is going to have to convince me probably in the dating pool, let alone date them.
I mean, that's what it'll be. It'll be someone you meet and then you'll be like, oh my God, are we dating?
Yeah. And you know what? That's lovely because I've tried to be optimistic in previous seasons of the pod, of the apps, and I don't think I have it in me anymore. I think it's a lot of them.
It's so bad. I went really hard this last like 2 weeks maybe on the apps and it's horrendous.
And the metaphor I've been thinking of for it is like there's a reason why we don't assume we're going to go on a date or even have a life with somebody who likes our photo on Instagram. And yet that's kind of what the apps feel like in terms of commitment level. So this person swiped. Does that mean anything? I'm not sure.
No, like it does.
And then you're kind of fighting to make the dynamic real. And I'm not saying that it can't happen. Like I have friends in my life. I have past podcast guests who have met even on Tinder. And yet, perhaps as much as it's a quick way to sort of make new connections and start conversations, you have an uphill battle to actually make that into something that feels more real than a face on your phone. Whereas you meet somebody in person, perhaps you've skipped some of those steps.
You do, because you could already judge, I think, when you first meet someone if there's like different levels of chemistry or like how do you even speak to them generally? Because I feel like that's always the hardest thing when you're talking online to someone, is like that first meeting, especially if you've talked too much. My rule is never talk too much. Try to meet them really quickly, because otherwise you've told them shit you shouldn't have told them. You've said things, you've made weird promises. You've, I don't know, insinuated that you're something when you're not, or they have as well. And you've like, and then I don't know, something like their voice is weird. And you're like, oh no, what is this accent? I hate this. I think we're from Liverpool. Hate that. Gross. Yeah. That's the accent I hate from the UK.
It's a beautiful accent. A lot of Irish people are from Liverpool. Don't one of them.
Well, I'd love that. I mean, I don't live in Liverpool, but just that accent really disturbs me. I don't know why. Or like Cockney. What if that was suddenly Cockney? What are you meant to do with that? I mean, it sounds fun, but I don't think it is.
The irony, I feel I should point out for any listeners that might be turning on you, is you would also feel the same way about a good chunk of Australian accents.
Oh, I hate Australian accents the most. Sorry, I should have said that first. I left Australia for many reasons, but we would sit sometimes and listen to Australian people working in our team, and I'm like, oh, that's gross. That makes me sick. And I'm like, oh, so funny. And I'm like, I hate it. I hate it so much. Why do we all sound like this? To you, dear listeners, I sound quite Australian, but I want you to know I'm not that Australian.
Yeah, you did turn to me on more than one occasion when overhearing other Australian people and say, I don't sound like that, do I? I had to reassure you.
Because it's so yuck, 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 yuck. Gross, gross, gross. I mean, I guess it's like a grass is greener situation. Like, people just don't think that their own accents or anything. But, like, I don't mind my actual voice is fine.
You're like, my one is fine, but fuck the lot of them.
I do. I hate them. I'm not mad. People who know that about me. I lived in Australia for 24 years. They were really hard years, you know what I mean? Like, they're all like that. It's terrible. Australian men also are bad. I think you could probably say it.
Is this going to be your rule of the game today? Get out of Australia.
Get out of there. It's not for you. You stole those lands. Anyway, that's a different conversation. But Australians are weird people. Yeah, I don't. It's
yeah, and
me.
You can say that.
I can. Everyone should, though.
Moving on to something that you can say, but I feel weirder saying, you would describe yourself as fat.
I would.
Keen to talk about how that can inform your experience dating.
Mm-hmm. I would describe myself as fat. There's a movement called Fat Liberation Movement, and there's lots of books and other people on it. Sophie Hagen's always the person I recommend to check out if you want more information about like fat liberation. So it's not quite body positivity. It's not like, oh, I love my body and that's fine. It also looks at like oppression that fat people receive in the world and things that aren't designed for fat bodies, but also even in a sense in like so many ways that people kind of perceive fat people as dirty, lazy, dumb, and desexualized a lot as well. So I think dating as a fat person is really interesting because you have all of those things that already exist, like that exist in the social like context of what we live in, like it's that in all media, you know, fat people, fat women, especially in media or in films and stories are, you know, either very matronly or very childish. And again, they're not in that sexual kind of space and they're not the lead romance, you know, like that's not, they're the funny best friend. They're Melissa McCarthy. That's the level of fat we can handle.
Yeah, but then even that feels like you've got to be funny to make up for your existence.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
how it can feel.
Well, how do you think I got this? Like, I mean, that's why I'm such a delight. I've been fat my whole life. But I can't.
Fat practice.
You're going to make it into a show. Yeah. You're going to make it into a show, right? But I think it's interesting because more recently, and probably in the last 10 years for me, I've been more aware of kind of the other movements and like looking at the kind of being fat from different perspectives, but it's so intrinsically connected to a lot of my sexual identity, but also in the sense of connecting to people, because I used to like make sure everyone knew, like when I was online dating, you know, you have enough photos, full body photos, and you have to make sure someone knows, because the worst thing that could happen is you meet them out and they go, oh, I don't know you were that fat. Like, you know, like that's the thing in the back of your head that goes, oh my God, what a mortifying situation that would be. My Tinder bio literally says fat, loud Australian is the first line of my Tinder bio, which I think is very accurate. Wish I wasn't Australian, but here we are. Like, I can't change that bit. Or the fact that I'm fat, or the fact that I'm loud. None of those things are changeable, actually. So they all are just what they are. And I have lots of photos where I'm like, yes, I actually am. Yeah, thanks. And that's fine. We're not aiming to change that. There's lots of advocating I've got to do in life anyway. But I do think it's interesting because you kind of sometimes can fall into a fetish land, which is interesting, which is fine if you're aware of like fat fetishes and like they call them like chubby chases and stuff. And if you fall into that land, I think as long as you're in control of it and are aware of it, I think like any fetish, you just have to make sure everyone's on the same page. I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with like a fat fetish or like a feeder fetish. Again, I'm not here to yuck anybody's yum. But then also...
question on that, yeah, if I may. How would you feel about someone having a fetish for... Because, you know my history and so do, yes, you know, listeners of particularly my mental health podcast, as someone with an eating disorder, the idea of someone fetishizing size in general would scare me.
Yeah, I think very fairly. And I think a lot of that, and you and I have spoken off pod, but a sense of like that being the thing that you're heavily perceived by as well, or perceived in, and like both of us, our size, yours and mine, is not the most interesting thing about us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like I think that being something that someone's focusing so heavily on when we're whole, full people that are much more than the vessel that we live in, I think that can be really challenging and quite two-dimensional, right? So I definitely can see why that would be a real struggle. And it has been something that I've dealt with before, but I think on both sides of that, I think it's just because I think there's a level of, we're much more than our bodies or our eating disorders or all of those kind of things. And yet to be just that level, it's quite challenging because you're like, no, please no. Hello, I'm a person, actually. Hi.
I have a brain. That's the most interesting bit. Yeah, but it is a thing. I actually don't think I've ever talked about this, but I have had it one time where I was in bed with someone and they said, I can't imitate the tone perfectly, but it was essentially like, oh, you're so thin. And it just, my soul leapt out of my body. Yeah. It was just like, visceral response of like, oh no, I suddenly feel deeply unsafe in this situation. Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
Oh, it's okay. But you know, it's not a coincidence that I wear baggy clothing. You know, even if I lot of that stuff I've worked through now, it's still is it that's the clothing I'm used to, or is that the clothing that still makes me feel comfortable? One, either, both. But, you know, for me, I'm not particularly in any great hurry to be perceived more so to do with my shape. Yeah.
But then you're naked, you know, you're like the most vulnerable you can be with somebody. And then obviously then body is such a factor of sex in lots of ways as well. So then your body is so inherently connected to those things. It's harder to separate, I think, maybe as well. So I think when you do have like dysphoric aspects or like you're kind of disconnected with your body or the reality of your body, then I think sex is really interesting in that way as well, because as much as you can definitely still disassociate, but I do think there's so much of your body that has to be present and you having to be aware of, I guess, how that works or how that fits. I don't know. I'm hoping that for you, I found a place with it with someone that I talked to for a bit that was really interesting because he was really obsessed with my stomach and my thighs. So it's interesting. He's like, his fetish was like, but I actually used it as a way to kind of like try to enjoy parts of my body that I hadn't really paid much of attention to or had kind of like discounted, or was like, as a fat person, as a fat woman, like your boobs and your butt, that's what's allowed to be big. That's what's sexy. That's the things that you're allowed to have that are bigger. And even like, I remember being in high school, like, it doesn't actually count if her boobs are big if she's fat. Like, that was like such a thing that like just sits in the back of my head for free, which is frustrating. But then having someone then like be really sexually attracted to my stomach and my thighs, you know, and like could send a photo like that, literally not even a dirty photo, like hilarious, but something, and like trying to like have a different relationship with my body and like connect with what my body can offer or what my body is. And I guess in that way of like, that it's attractive in lots of different ways, but that is my body. That's not being talking about my brain. That's my big fat body and how it can be attractive and what it's good at and lots of different things. So I don't know. It's interesting. I feel for me, it was like a reclaiming of that.
Yeah. And that's been a big healing thing for me, actually, is like getting myself to focusing more on what I find attractive about other people, because so much of that is pleasantly surprising. You know, it's ways in which people look distinctive. It's not ways in which people look conventionally attractive, usually.
Yeah.
You know, and I think even like having done work in the modeling industry, it's interesting that even within a very shallow industry, you still find elements of that. Like a lot of the work I got was because of the ways I deviate from stereotypical attractiveness. You know, that's what sets you apart when everyone is the same height, when everyone is, you know, a certain level of thinness or whatever else is perceived as attractive in that room. it's the things that make you look distinctive actually end up really coming to the top. And I think I've always looked at other people in that way of like, I'm fascinated in people, I'm fascinated in what makes them distinct. And so if I find people attractive in that way, I just need to find other people like that for me.
Definitely. But I feel like you mentioned an interesting thing there, which is what you find attractive. That's something that I think is quite common, or maybe with other fat girls as well, that I never conceived. I never went, oh, who do I find attractive? I went, they find me attractive? I must sleep with them. Thank God someone did. And I never had to, like, way later than I should have, like, had that kind of more, oh, what do I actually want? Who do I find attractive? Why do I find, and I'm not even questioning why do I find them attractive, but like even just having that as part of the conversation. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, I can play the game. Let's play the game. But then I was like, oh, I can actually try to do this with people that I'm attracted to. That's interesting. And wild times.
Yeah. No, but I get it. And so much of that is within the context of a world where fat people are still... See, I even have to consciously say it, because for me, it's I'd okay. say like bigger say bodied.
It. You can say larger bodied. That's fine.
I'm
not mad at that.
It's like the last vestige of like not being a protected characteristic, where it's like people can say fucking anything. The discrimination is rampant, acceptable and normalized. In a way that I would only jokingly compare as like the only other areas, maybe like ginger men. You know, I live in one of the countries with the highest rate of gingerdom, and yet that is still an incredibly common thing for people to be bullied about. And, you know, so of course it would make sense that within that context, with having this stuff kind of around you all the time, you would be like, oh, what a pleasant surprise. Someone is attracted to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, people literally now are stealing drugs out of diabetics' hands to be less fat, or even not even that fat, like to even just like lose a little bit of weight. Like, the situation's happening right now with like different drugs that are like actually taking out of people, like literally just because it's like a fad of like, this might help you lose weight, like that being a huge craze. And I guess also just like the diet industry is itself. And also because people can hide behind like the facade of like health. I'm trying to help you because of your health. And we separate physical health to mental health in a really interesting, fun way there. Because again, and you've talked about your eating disorders stuff as well, but for me, yeah, when I, of course I tried to lose weight. I've been a fat person my entire life. Of course I have. And it really just left me with a really intense eating disorder and having to make a choice of if I wanted to live happy or if I wanted to torture myself till I die. You know, like you got to make that choice sometime. And then you have to generally live with that choice. But then it's interesting because even I'm still like, oh, for a second you go, oh, would that drug make it easier? Because being in a thinner body would make my life easier, right? Like that's just a factor. But Sophie Hagen has a fun thing, especially with dating actually. And they say that a benefit of being fat is you can tell someone's character really quickly, because like otherwise you would have to wait till they meet someone fat to find out if they're fatphobic. But like you can kind of figure out straight away that, like things like that you can like know straight away if you're dating someone, those kind of issues, because they'll be right in front of you, so you're less likely to like have a sneaky fatphobic get into your bed, things like that, which is interesting. They've got like heaps of different like pros of being fat, but it is one of those things that I think, because it's everywhere and it's completely allowed, but yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one. And yeah, I think it does make sense. Like, I'm not surprised that I've behaved the way I've behaved, but I'm also frustrated that I think it took me as long as it took me to get to a point where I'm like, actually, I'm great, fat and all, you know, like, and if I'm dating somebody, I'd want them to like all of those aspects, but including my body. Like, I don't want it to be separate. I want it to be a whole package because that's what I am. Again, it's not the most interesting part of me, but it's still there. It's something that is every day and is, you know, still what I carry. What makes me strong and what makes me, you know.
Yeah. And I think this is a thing that not everyone can grasp of like, there actually is and should be a separation of self-worth and any factor to do with your body.
Yeah.
You know, I've very much, as I alluded to earlier, been around plenty of the opposite side. The modeling industry is full, packed with people that hate themselves. It never fundamentally comes down to what society thinks is acceptable to look like. You know, it's always your own journey. And, you know, you having confidence in yourself is beautiful throughout your life. And I, you know, can agree more where you said of like, you're going to spend your whole life torturing yourself, because that's what it is. There's plenty of people, you know, in a, you know, quote unquote, completely sort of normal weight range that spend their whole life gaining and losing the same 2 pounds. And yeah. it's you know, scientifically less healthy for you than just staying at the upper 2 pounds.
And guess what? It's all going to come back anyway, because diets aren't a thing that work long term.
Oh, if they worked, we'd know which one worked by now. We would have figured it out. So there's a new one every week.
It's just capitalism every time. Capitalism, patriarchy, you know.
I mean, we've had this conversation. Does anyone have a healthy relationship with food, with money, with so many things?
Yeah, right. But then again, like, I've worked really hard to have a healthy relationship with food because it's something that I struggle with for so long that I really go, oh, what do I feel like? And it's like not as like intuitive eating in the sense of like read the book on that, but it's more just like trying to actually think about what I want and not having good and bad foods and not having to like, but then it's that thing of like, if you're out on a date, you know, if you're picking what to eat on a date, there's like so many things that are attached to those things, because when you're out and being perceived as a fat person eating, you're eating a salad. Well, sure, she doesn't eat many salads. Of course, she doesn't. Look at her. You're eating a burger. Of course, she's eating a burger. That's how she got that way. You know, like there's not actually a thing you can eat.
Get out of jail. For
out
God.
In the world.
Yeah.
That works. And if you're with someone you don't know, it's why obviously we'd never go on a dinner date when you first, we're not in Sex and the City. But it's interesting because again,
I've stopped doing dinner. That used to be my main thing. I don't know.
Imagine that.
I can't explain it.
Especially for you, actually.
No, well,
I question that.
Yeah. Well, also it was, yeah, I mean, it was easier because I would generally choose the restaurant. So that helped. And I tell you what, I would never do, mention an eating disorder, because that's going to be a guaranteed 2 hours or however long of them staring at me while I eat. That's not fun for anyone.
It's not the vibe, no.
Yeah.
Now, I like a coffee. I like coffee and a walk or a drink, a classic drink into that. But coffee is cheaper than alcohol. So then a COVID thing I did is I went coffees and walks because it was cheaper. Like if you're only spending like £3 instead of like six, like... So then you can kind of like get in and out faster if it's not working for you. And you have like a nice time frame, like an hour max.
You also just have an easy excuse where you're like, oh, I actually just need to get back to work.
Yeah. Or like, oh, what's the time? My cat needs to be fed, you know, bye-bye. And yeah, it's just all those things. But I don't know. Dating is wild. Is that what this podcast is about? Dating's wild. That's my hot take. There you go. You're welcome, listeners. Far and wide.
And so let's start wrapping up then. We've already given them a bumper length episode to start off the season, so that's fine. So tell me, what would be something we can do? What is your rule of the game for how you try and live in dating relationships?
Okay. In the words of Cher, men are dessert. They're a bit extra. They're not your main thing. I think if you've got a life that you like and you enjoy and then has all these amazing elements, these incredible people in it already, these friendships, your family, if that's what you're into, but like, on, and you know, or your career, and like, you know, some people don't have family, but you know, and you have all these kind of people.
You just made it sound world. Like, if that's your kink, having a family.
No, I didn't mean like in that way. God damn it. No, I just mean like, some, you know, whatever your support network is that kind of make you up to who you are. And I think as long as you're kind of, it's that thing, right? You don't want to like the whole completing people doesn't make sense. You have to come into a situation as a complete person, and that person has to complement that and be that value add, be that dessert. Now, I'm someone who sometimes likes two desserts, so we'll see. But I don't know if that metaphor still travels. But I just think that there is a level of you do you, and then the extra bit will come if and when you need it or want it.
Yes, absolutely. And I would add, very much tying into how we're going to theme this season, dating is so subjective.
Super, yeah.
And this season, this time round, we are going to get as many different perspectives as possible because, you know, I want to lean into, like, let's question everything. Let's not take anything for granted. We'll figure some shit out.
I think we will. I mean, I'm happy to be along the journey.
Yeah, like, I will be sitting from home being like, what great points being made on my podcast.
Good job, Bobby. When done.
All right. This is normally the part where I ask if people want to plug things. Do you want to plug your podcast?
Oh, my podcast is called Letters to Miss Piggy. It is in a permanent hiatus, but it's very good. So still go have a listen to it. And then more recently, I was on the Scottish Independence podcast as well, promoting my event about arts activism and Scottish Independence.
I thought you were going to say, promoting my stance.
Can you imagine?
I am Scottish Independence. I'm not even Australian anymore.
I moved to this country to fight for it, actually. But no, so those are the kind of two things I'm at. My Instagram is just jazz, which if you're old enough to know is a Will and Grace joke. And welcome.
There you go. I have one thing you've reminded me of I have to tell you right now, which is when I interviewed Kima Bob, I was chatting to them off mic and before we got into the interview and sort of checking in of like, I think there were riots happening in London. There was just a lot of like bad news coming across the sea there. And I was like, so, you know, how is it? It's like, it seems like it's never a good time to live in London anymore. And Kima goes, you know what? I don't even identify with being in this country anymore.
It's incredible. Like, no, not for me.
I've moved on. I'm floating
about.
I
identify very heavily Scottish. I identify Scottish. I'm a new Scot, technically. We're Scottish. I don't date nearly enough Scottish people. So
there you go. First generation please. Scottish. Love that.
Let's go. Yeah.
All right. We'll wrap there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damaged by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.